We're going to go ahead and we're going to look at the concept of time. And we're going to see how time is measured in the Bible. It won't be an exhaustive thing, but we're going to look at it. I'm going to start out by going to Revelation chapter 10. People from neo-evangelical liberal churches think I'm a hyper-fundamentalist. Fundamentalists think I'm a liberal. And we're Revelation 10, right? But part of the thing is, amongst fundamentalists, I really am the anti-fundamentalist, because there's so many things they teach now that they just kind of teach by rote, and they'll have like one verse and contradicts 82,000 things in the Bible, but they hold on to it or whatever. And let me say this. When you're teaching the Bible, sometimes you'll hear friends argue. And one will say, well, I have 10 verses, you have 11, so you must be right. No, there's no such thing as contradictory verses. In other words, if I have 100 verses saying what I think it says, and you have one verse that in context, speaking who it should, disagrees with me, I need to change. There's something wrong here. I'm misapplying my 100 verses. Okay? In order for a doctrine to be correct, all the verses have to point to it within their own time frame and such. Now, the famous example I use is, you get a car and you're wondering how much oil should be in this, okay? So, you pick it up and it says, 5.5 quarts is how much ought to be in there, whatever. Your wife picks it up and it's talking about draining the oil out, all right? Well, these instructions disagree. No, you're two different places in the instructions, okay? One's telling you how to change the oil. The other's telling you how to have the car running down the road right, all right? So you have to know how to look. Timing, what it's talking about, who it's talking to, and such. But this idea that different verses contradict, and I have these, that's just, you got to get out of that mindset. So with that in mind, Revelation 10, verse 6, this is one of the places the fundamentalists really hurt themselves. It says in verse 6, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that are therein, the earth and the things that are therein, and the sea and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer. I've probably heard 20 evangelists say, well, in the millennium there won't be time. There won't be time. Okay? Will the sun be all going around? Okay? How do you have a millennium, 1,000 years, if there's no time, all right? And but they get into this Rod Serling, Albert Einstein thing, or whatever, it won't be time. Now, there's two ways you can take that verse. Either the angels say, look, you people on earth, you've had your chance to repent, there'll be time no longer. Or it means the concept of time will be over. Now, which one will the rest of the Bible support? Okay? The rest of the Bible supports there will always be time. But the rest of the Bible supports, there's a time when God pulls the rug out from under the people who waited too long. Okay? Now we're going to go look at the concept of time. And go with me, if you would, to Genesis chapter 1. I've had guys that I really even think a lot of or whatever, and they'll say that, and I just cringe. Like, how are you saying that stuff? There's a few of them that just drive me nuts when I hear them. Genesis chapter 1, go to verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. So God intended to divide time and measure it by what's out there in the heavens. That's how God intended to do it, okay? Now it goes on and it says this. Verse 15, let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven, and to give light upon the earth, and it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser night to rule the night. He made the stars also. It's kind of an interesting little, by the way, he just made the stars, verse 17, and God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. That's really where God's taking the heaven, and he's making the two heavens. That's why Genesis 1 starts, God created the heaven. Genesis 2 starts, that's where the heavens finished. Okay, originally he makes the atmosphere. Now he's going ahead and making what we call the second heaven, which is outer space. Then there's the third heaven, which is God's heaven, okay? But, and it says this, verse 17 again, God set them in the firm of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness, and God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Now, you notice there, the day started in the evening. That's why the Jews start their day 6 o'clock at night the night before, okay? Avi Gold, some of you corresponded with him on Facebook and such. Shabbat, when it's 6 o'clock in the evening in Israel, or whenever the sun goes down there, he keeps track of when the sun goes down, wherever he is. On Friday night, it's over. He always says, I'll keep in communication with you 24-6, all right? He doesn't do it on the Sabbath. He's a law-keeping Jew. So the thing is, God intended to have days. In God's outline, the day starts in the evening before and ends the next evening. One of the places that becomes important is when you're studying the Gospels, trying to understand the timing of when Jesus Christ is in Pilate's judgment hall, when he's in Caiaphas's place and such. Because when he's in a Jewish place, it's giving you the time in Jewish time. When he's in a Roman place, it's giving you the time in the Romans. That's why a lot of the liberals, oh, that it contradicts itself. It says the third hour. Over here it says this hour. No. In Caiaphas' place, 9 o'clock in the morning is the third hour.
So God's trying to say that he puts 2 days together?
He actually starts the day the night before. In other words, at 6 o'clock tonight, he'd say, okay, Monday just started. That's how a Jew would do it. Now, we're Gentiles, so we don't do it that way. All right? But that's how they did it, okay? So the thing is that God intended to use the skies to divide the times, okay? That's how he intended to do that. Now, with that in mind, go with me to Proverbs chapter 8. And we'll go to verse 22. Wisdom is speaking here, okay? When you divide the seven spirits of God, some of you heard me say this over and over again, this is new to some. When you go find the seven spirits of God, you'll actually find 21 different names of spirit that are deity. 14 of them have a capital S, 7 of them have a small s. The reason for that is each one of the seven spirits of God will take on a different name depending which member of the Trinity he's manifesting, okay? But of those 21 names, one of them is wisdom, and it's interesting because wisdom is the only female one. Okay, wisdom's a female spirit, it's deity. That's why it says, and God made man and woman in his image, okay? What's the thing that Jesus Christ had to sacrifice in order to go to the cross? He had to sacrifice his wisdom, okay? When did he do that? He let Judas walk up and kiss him. What did David say when Joab killed men that way? He said, they died as fools. They died as fools, letting someone just come up and kiss them and take them that way, okay? Jesus Christ is standing there. The first thing he had to sacrifice is wisdom. That's why the foolishness of God is wiser than men, okay? But I say all that just to say this. I want you to look at this. Here's wisdom speaking out in verse 22. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. Now that'll go and gender to the book of Micah, when it's talking about he that cometh forth from Bethlehem, whose going forth had been of old, from everlasting. So there's no doubt that wisdom is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is wisdom. This is one of the seven spirits that make him up in the Godhead. Then it says this, verse 24. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no waters, when there were no fountains abounding with water. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. Well, as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth. Now, there's a lot of doctrine in that. Number one, before he made the world, the heavens were there. That's why I tell you over and over again, Genesis 1:1 chronologically is not the first thing God ever did. Okay? That's why people get into gap theories and all this, trying to fit all these things. No. Genesis 1:1 is the beginning of God, of Moses' story. Okay? God and the angels have existed for who? There's no telling how long that kingdom went on before that, before he made Genesis 1:1. There's no telling that. Well, go look at this again. Verse 24. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains of abounding water. Before the mountains were settled. Before the hills was I brought forth. Well, as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest parts of the dust, when he prepared the heavens. Okay? So what was made first? The heavens were made first. That's why in the book of Job, when you read Job 38, God says to Job, where were you when I laid the foundation there? And the sons of God shouted for joy. So when Genesis 1:1 is going on, the sons of God are shouting for joy. Okay? It's not the first thing that ever happened. Chronologically, it's the first thing that Moses writes and talks about in the beginning. But if you take that turn in the beginning and look at it every place, chronologically, they're never in the same time. Okay? But regardless of that, the point is, he says, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth. What's a compass? It's a circle. Okay. We think of compasses in the sense you take a compass north, south, east, west. But again, it's giving that whole radius. What was a compass when you took geometry in school? Well, you had that point, you put a pencil in it, and you made circles around. Okay. So a compass is, it's a circle. When did God set a circle upon the depth? Okay. How many degrees in a circle? 360. How many days in a Jewish year? 360. Okay. So when he set this up, and this is important, prior to Satan's fall, the earth was in the center of the universe. Psalm 24, he had founded it upon the seas and established it upon the floods. It floated. Okay. That's before Satan's fall. You read the book of Job, it'll tell you how he overturned the earth. It'll tell you about the tsunami, and that's why you find it in Genesis, where the earth is without form and void. It's just a big blob underneath the water. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and it's dark. Why is it dark? Because the devil's already fallen. Okay? That's why it's dark. It happened before Genesis 1:1 that happened. Now what's God doing? He's replacing this. He takes a man and he reaches down and makes him. The devil's like, that thing's going to replace me? Yeah, that thing's going to replace you. Okay, that thing's going to take your place. But the point of that is this. He set a compass upon the face of the depth. The earth sat there in the middle of that thing. Take the clock and put it out there. How many seconds in that clock? 360 seconds. Okay, it's just like a Jewish year. How many main points are on that clock? 12. Okay? How many months are there in the Jewish year? There's 12 of them. Okay? And God set it up to divide the heavens that way. All of time is measured that way. One of the greatest proofs of the fall of the devil is the fact the earth now has 365 1/4 days. It's out of kilter. It doesn't work anymore. That's why the astrologers and that, they go out there and they're trying to read it. They don't understand. The earth isn't in the center of that hub anymore, Bubba. You're trying to read a system that's broken. It's not working. You're getting up with the principle. The earth's over here. It's not where it used to be. Go back and read in the book of Job. Job's your sign book. It'll tell you God moved the earth. Okay? It's not where it used to be. Yes, sir.
Does it have something to do with North Star never moving?
It probably does. In the sense Polaris never moving or whatever else. I'm sure it does. That idea that God said a fixed point. In fact, is Mount Zion on the sides of the north? The city of the great king. I always tell my southern friends, the closer to the north you get, the closer to God. All right? The closer you get to the south, the closer to hell you get. All right? That's just my right? I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, to get to stir anything up or whatever. It's just my Bible, all right? It's sick of the Bible. All right. Babe, that's why I rescued you and brought you, all right? Brought you out of that. All right. Yeah. All right, so the thing is, again, God set up that 360-degree circle, and time was on that. Now go with me to the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 66. Nick's going to actually draw me a poster, or a picture, and I'm going to show you a picture. We're going to Isaiah 66, but for a moment I'm going to describe Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 28 talks about a Tyrus. And it's a place where the prince and the king of Tyrus rule. But then it tells you that they were in the garden. And it tells you he's the anointed cherub. And God set him up so, and there's sanctuaries. He's a spice trader and he's a mariner. When did all that happen in your Bible? You know, when did all that take place? Okay? And the point is, it took place far before Genesis 1:1. Okay? Far before that, the devil and the angels and all that. God destroyed that world that was. He destroyed that. It was a demonic kingdom. It fell demonic because the devil fell. That's why the book of Amos says a portion of the great deep was burned up. You look out there in space and you see the evidences of that war. Make Star Wars look like a little Lego game. I mean, we're just war in the heavens and such. What do we fight with today? Well, we fight not against principalities or powers, but against spiritual wickedness. Where? In high places, okay? That's all right? Spiritual wickedness in high places. That's what we fight against. Alright? That's why the prince of the power of the air. You know, the first thing that God made that he did not call good was the firmament.
Yep.
You go back, he never called that good. He called the light good, he called the night, all those things he called good. But when he made the firmament that heaven, he didn't call it good. It's one of the few great statements Clarence Larkin made. Why didn't he call it good? Because the prince of the power of the air, they immediately re-inhabit that. They immediately get back in there and take that over. But Isaiah 66, if you go to verse 22, "For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain." Now right off the bat, I'm going to give you two verses that contradict. Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, the earth abideth forever. But John says he saw the earth go away. Isaiah says there's a new one. How do you reconcile that? Okay? Well, let me ask you this. Are you a new creature in Christ? Okay, were you created in righteousness and true holiness? Does that mean you never existed before? Old things have passed away, haven't they? But yet they're still here, right? The earth goes through the same phases that a person goes through. Went through that phase of fallen, redeemed, made again, okay? Resurrection. But it's the same earth, okay? God told Israel, this land is yours forever. Did he destroy it? Make it new? No, that land is yours forever, okay? It's just on the new earth. It's the only way. How do you know it? Because I'm reconciling two verses that can't be wrong, okay? They can't be wrong. It's impossible for one of them to be wrong. But if I take it that way, both verses are right and they fit, okay? And then I find other places where God calls a person created in righteousness. Well, I thought I was born. Yeah, but you're also created in righteousness. You're a new creature. What happened to the old creature? Unfortunately, it's still right there, okay? That's just the way God does things. But it says this again, verse 23, "And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord." You see this thing with Tanya? This is a gracious thing. For years, I just sorrowed over that boy and thought there's no hope whatsoever. Then Tanya got saved. She began to take him under the wing. He's begun to know discipline and such, and it's a joy to me. So every once in a while, you hear this in church, and he's going to cry a bit and such. I remember when he could just get away with that with impunity, and she'd be angry and leave, and there was no hope. There's hope now. It was a glorious thing, okay? It's our honor in this church. Don't you worry about that. I know you're wailing when you get home, but don't you worry. You know? Fan that behind, all right? So verse 23 again, it says, "And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord." How do they know when to come? Because that moon is out there, and that new moon what Tolkien calls that little bit of a fingernail coming out there. You can just barely see it, that new moon. And they say, ah, another month has started. How many of those were there? Ideally, they should last 30 days long, okay? The English word month, named after the moon, okay? That English word month, and there should have been 12 of those in a year. Ideally, what happened? There's been war in the heavens. A portion of the great deep is burned up, okay? It's all out of kilter. It's all, and you just read your Bible, it tells you the earth reeling to and fro like a drunkard, it says. And Paul talks about the whole creation groaning and travailing together and such. It's all a mess. But this is what God's going to reestablish. So you'll have the moon dictating. It'll be like that hour hand. It's telling you, all right, come. But then it's talking about how each day there's your minute hand going around, or really your second hand going around and establishing that, okay? And it's setting that up. That's how God set time up. And that's how time will go back to that again. Why? Because Solomon said that which is from the beginning, God requireth that which is past. That's why Jesus Christ taught, or Peter in Acts chapter 2, he talks about the restitution of all things, okay? Where it's all brought back to what it is. Jesus Christ calls it the regeneration, okay? Paul talks about how we have the washing of regeneration. Boy, that perfect heaven and that perfect earth when God makes it over. How could a man like me stand there where God took me and gave me that washing of regeneration? Made me meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in life. I can go and live in that world with them and reign with them forever. That's right. That's good stuff. Okay? That says in verse 24, and they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. For their worms shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring to all flesh. Can you imagine that? Every 30 days, going to the lake of fire. There's grandma bubbling up. There's Uncle So-and-so. There's that neighbor bubbling up. That's what it says. That's what it says. Okay? You think it's important to reach people? Think it's important maybe to witness and tell people and live a good and a consistent life. You want something you can't witness because you can't live a consistent life in front of people. Okay? And you know what? You just learn to tell them, I'm a sinner, but my God's not. Okay? And you're right. You just caught me in hypocrisy. And I'm sorry. I live below what I should have been. You just caught me in hypocrisy. Stay around me. You'll catch me in hypocrisies. Remember seeing a cartoon as a kid one time? This couple sitting in the car, and there's a cop talking to him. He says, I saw you had out-of-state license plates. Just want me to give you a ticket now or follow you around till you make a mistake. You know, but the whole point is, follow a Christian around. He's going to screw up. He's going to make mistakes. I'm going to make mistakes or whatever else. I hope you handle them. I hope you handle them in the bowels of Jesus Christ. I hope to handle them with humility. I hope to handle them in such a way that you realize maybe there is something different. I was telling somebody, you know how you measure a business? Not by it doing things perfectly. That carpet cleaner that came in and did the last 20 people and it was all perfect. It's the time they go in there and the employee spills something on your carpet and leaves a stain. Now you find out what kind of business you have, okay? Is there anybody who can run a business where an employee never does that? Anybody can run a business where nothing like that ever goes on? No, but that's when you measure a business. How are you going to handle the fact that your employee just ruined my carpet, okay? And you know what? When you find a business that comes in there and they handle that and take the responsibility and work it out with you, you just give them the highest ratings in the world. You've just found the character of that person. I remember writing off and ordered a book from somebody, and it was kind of it was a hard-to-find book. And, you know, the day came, the end of it, I was excited. I opened it up, and it's not some love book. I'm like, what? So I get a hold of the people. You know, I make good money for this. You know what they said? They said, we mixed them in the envelope. There's no way we can ever straighten it up. They said, but your money's been restored to you and you keep that book. So I had a love book. But the point is, I gave them 5 stars on their rating. Why? Because that's the right way to handle a mistake. Okay? You know what? That's how your Christian life should be. You're not going to go out there and live perfect. Live the best you can in front of people. But when you do screw up, handle it like a Christian. Handle it like somebody. Handle it like they're not used to. handle it by going and saying, yeah, I really did mess up. I really did screw up, okay? I really did make a mistake here and such. And you know what? If there's 100 people in here you do that, there'll be one or two that they'll never understand that. They'll just say, ah, yeah, we knew he was a jerk. But there'll be about 99 or 98 of them that'll really be impressed and realize, my golly, that's a Christian, okay? That's what that person's supposed to be. All right, let's go to Genesis 8. Genesis 8. Genesis 8, verse 20. And Noah built an altar unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more every thing living as I have done. Verse 22, while the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Will there ever be a time that God gets rid of time? No. Okay? So again, but you just, if you sit around and listen to a lot of these fundamentals, and some of them are good, better men than I am. Okay? I mean, better character and better administrators and probably love the Lord more and everything else, but they get mixed up in this stuff. You know, I say, well, you know, Jesus comes back, there won't be time anymore. You know, well, how do you know when to go to the bathroom? I mean, you know what? All right. Go with me to Jeremiah 33. Jeremiah 33, look at verse 20. Jeremiah 33, 20. Thus saith the Lord, if ye can break my covenant of the day and my covenant of the night, that there should not be day and night in their seasons, then also my covenant be broken with David my servant, that he should not have a son to reign upon his throne, and with the Levites and the priests my ministers. Do you realize that the very promise of Jesus Christ sitting on a throne rests with continuing day and night forever? You see that? He has tied those two together. So when a man stands up and says, well, there won't be time anymore. What are you saying? The very covenant God made with day and night, he rested his promise of Jesus Christ on that, that it will always be. Do you realize 28 trillion years from now, there will still be night and day? The heavens will still be there. And you know what? The kingdom will still be growing. How do you know that? Because it says, of the increase of his government, there shall be no end. There'll never be a time when God's not creating more worlds and people not dying and reproducing and going out there and such. You say, well, I thought the people in heaven didn't reproduce. People in the resurrection don't. What about the people in the millennium? They're just taken straight in. Okay? You're in the millennium and you're one of the 12 saved nations that Jesus Christ takes. Okay? Does he kill them all and resurrect them? No, they just go on, okay? They just go on. Well, how do they live? It says they have to come and take and eat of the tree of life. That's why Joel 3:21 says, I will cleanse their blood, which I have not cleansed. Why? Because the sin nature's in the blood. See, how does he do that? Based on the cross of Jesus Christ, he allows those nations to come and eat of that fruit. And you know what? Apparently, for the first 100 years, you're in probation. Because it talks about a child of 100 years, okay? And that child could die there at that point and such. So after 100 years, if I get this right, this is the best I can understand that verse and put it together, okay? After that 100 years, that person can then take of that tree of life. That's why in the book of Revelation, that's the curse. They lose their right to that tree of life. They're not allowed to eat of that, okay? What would happen if Adam and Eve had eaten of it? They'd live forever. That's why God had to get them out of the garden. Stop them. Don't let them come back here. Don't let them eat of that. Okay? They would have lived forever. But the point of that is this. God will always have day and night, always have the spring and the summer, always have those things. They'll always go. Never be a time when those things are over and those things are done. Go with me to Galatians chapter 4. Look at verse 2. It's talking about how the child, how he's not different from a servant. Galatians chapter 4, verse 2. But is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the Father. Okay. I remember one time had a fellow in our church in South Carolina who was heir to a large fortune, and I mean millions of dollars. And his grandfather had built the largest steel company in South Carolina. And the boy knew nothing but sorrow. His mother had committed suicide. His father had run off with secretaries and such. And he actually started coming to the church with no one realizing that he was wealthy or anything. And he just wanted to be somewhere where people didn't know who he was. And one day he came up and handed Pastor Randall something to pay the church's mortgage off. Kind of gave it away. But the thing is... And the other thing is, Pastor Randall wouldn't take it. He said, we'll let you hold the mortgage, but we're going to pay you payments. And he said, if you want to give each payment back, that's fine. He says, but you're too young. He said, I'm not trusting your experience in this yet. And he said, you've been abused by too many people, all right, in your life. And so, you know, and if the kid wanted to take that mortgage payment and put it back, he could put it back. If he wanted to keep it that week, he could keep it that week. But regardless of that, this kid went ahead and couldn't wait till he turned 21, you know, because then he could, instead of just having these stipends that were given to him, you know, he was going to go get his inheritance. And he went and sat in the bank, and the officers came out and said, no, your grandfather knew you. You have turned 30. And you know what? It turned out to be a good thing. His grandfather didn't know him. All right? He had to wait until he was 30. And he was pretty disappointed. He had to work a job and things like that, you know. But, you know, it really was good. Yeah, it built some character. So it talks about the times appointed to the fathers. That's what a son is. He's somebody like that. Verse 3, even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. Now, I want you to stop and think of that time. The moon. You know what the word lunatic means? Someone gone crazy by the moon. Okay, that's what that means. When I was in the Philippines, I actually knew a man, Pastor Suna. He had a daughter by the name of Julia, and she had to be locked up on full moons. Why? They don't have the medicines there. They didn't have the stuff to control that. When full moons came, they just locked her up. Okay, she was just as crazy as can be. Go into any maternity ward and ask the nurses what it's like when there's a full moon. Okay? Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, ask the ladies. Do you think it's a coincidence that your timing of your body when it's running right, and I realize that doesn't happen a lot, but it just, you know, when it's running right and such, it's on that same size. Why? We're under bondage on the elements of the world. Okay? What's God going to do? He wants to break it. What do astrologers and everybody want? The naturalists, they want you to be still in this and understand and, you know, climb a mountain and get in a Zen yoga position and say, oh, I'm one with the rocks, you know, and all this kind of thing. No, God says, I'm breaking you free from that. I'm going to make you different than that. I'm going to break you out of the elements of the world. Yes, sir. I'm sure that, yeah, and there's a point where God does take and he melts everything with a fervent heat and such. And yeah, if you weren't saved, you're certainly going to be under bondage to those elements. But it goes on, it says this, verse 4, but when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law. You know, I've always loved that fullness of time. One of the things, for example, some of you listened to Hector Sotomayor when he came here on Thursday night and he gave his testimony of how God has profited him and such. But, you know, for a long time, he went from being this, you know, Puerto Rican kid and joining the Marine Corps and then getting saved and coming back to Rochester and learning and such. And then being in that church for many, many years as a sheriff's deputy. And then the fullness of time, God made him the pastor of that church. If he'd done it a year earlier, it wouldn't have been any good, okay? Mm-hmm. If he'd pushed and tried to do so, but in the fullness of time. And when he became the pastor, everyone knew that was right. That Joe and Christine that come here and that, you know, that Joe comes here and such, he didn't even like the church using. He just loves it now that Hector's there. You know, he just loves it and such. It's just a wonderful thing. But you know what? your whole life, wait for the fullness of time. Wait for God to do what God's trying to do in your life. Okay? Don't push things. Don't shove things. The older people here can tell you a lot of sorrow to making things happen more quickly. A lot of sorrow to trying to manipulate things. A lot of sorrow behind it. Be where you're supposed to be. Be content with where you are. Learn to be content. Whatsoever state I'm in, therewith I've learned to be content. And then God, in the fullness of time, he knows where you are and he'll change it. One of the sure ways to know that you're content is you don't care if he ever changes it. And when he does change it, you're glad, but you're going to live without it. Now again, you've heard me say, I used to lie to God. Okay, I'm content now, change it. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Nice little boy, you know, in his room telling him, I'll be good, mommy, I'll be good with you. You know, yeah, sure you'll be good. Yeah, sounds like you're wonderful in there, you know. Just what I want running around the kitchen right now. All right, so it talks about in the fullness of time, God sent forth the Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that you might receive the adoption of sons. Now keep that in mind, that adoption of sons is the resurrection of your body. It says that in Romans 8. It says it, okay? You don't get a choice on that. Why? Because your soul and your spirit don't need to be adopted. They're born of God. But your body isn't. There's Stephen. He's born of me, okay? If God's going to make his body his, he's got to adopt it. He was born of me, okay? The adoption is the rapture. Go read Romans 8. It says it, okay? It tells you right out that's what it is. All right, so you receive verse 6. And because you're sons, God sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Wherefore, there are no more a servant, but a son, and if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. Howbeit then, when you knew not God, you did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now, after that you have known God, or rather are known of God, I'll turn you again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto you desire to be in bondage. In other words, I'm not going to be governed by the poles of nature, and I'm not going to be governed by my astrological sign, and I'm not going to be governed by those kind of things and such. I've got a higher principle that I'm going to be governed by. Now, my body might still be trapped in that stuff, all right? But I am not going to myself be governed by that. All right. Go to Colossians chapter 2. Look at verse 16. Let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink in respect of an holy day or the new moons or the Sabbath days. In other words, you're told don't let them judge you. Don't let them do it. They walk up to you, you should be eating this, you shouldn't be eating, you're going to do this on this day and that. Don't let them do that. You're ordered. Don't let them do that. Okay? But then it says this. Verse 17, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. What? You mean there's going to be Sabbaths in the future? You mean meats and holy days in the future? Yeah, read the book of Ezekiel. There's that temple in the book of Ezekiel. Now, you know how that temple's there? Because it says, the Apostle Paul said, if you're going to do the law at one point, you're going to have to do the whole thing. Okay? And it actually tells you in the book of Ezekiel that the priests in that temple were the rebels. They were the ones who wouldn't do what was right. And so God said, okay, well, everybody else is out there at liberty. You're going to spend eternity in the temple, all right? You're going to spend eternity doing this. So God's going to reestablish Israel with all the glory of those Sabbaths and the glory of those things and all those things that be going on. We don't need to turn there right now, but one of the fascinating places to look at is Deuteronomy 32, verse 8, because Moses says God divided the children of men according to the number of the children of Israel. How many tribes did Israel have? 12. That's why you hear him say 12 saved nations. He divided the world in that. But Israel had a 13th tribe, didn't it? The Levites. So the world had that 13th nation, Israel, the priest one, okay? You'll have those 12. And that's why in Matthew 25, Jesus Christ comes out and he judges the nations. What's the criterion of judgment? How did you treat his brother? Okay. You think Germany would do real well how they treated the Jews? Poland do real well how they treated the Jews? No, they're not going to do well at all. How about Denmark?
Yes.
Yeah, you better believe it. One of the makes you weep just to think the Germans, they come in, they take Denmark over, and they're afraid they need the Danish farm goods, so they can't pull all these things out of there. So they order, and every day, Queen Christian would get on his horse, and he would ride around Copenhagen because he's the king, and the Germans want everyone to see. See, we haven't changed anything. Everything's right. And they gave an order now that every Jew had to wear a yellow Star of David. The next morning, a Christian came out with that yellow Star of David, and every day he put one on himself. Okay? Every Jew had one on, but no one could tell the difference. Very, very few Danish Jews ever died in all that. So it's one of those things, Jesus Christ will come and he'll judge the nations for how they treated his brethren here on this earth. And it says there's 12 of those nations, and he takes those nations into eternity with him. Takes them in, and there they are. And it says that for the increase of his government, there should be no end. And just constantly out there, world without end, and just going on and on and on. What's your place if you're in the church to rule and reign with him? Okay? To have a body like unto his glorious body, and to go out there. Say, what if I live a crummy life on this earth? It says, well, if you suffer with him, you'll reign with him. Okay? Do you realize there's some of you who'd be punished by being left in heaven? You know, say, Jesus, it's the millennium. I want to go to that rule. No, you like your, you know, this and that. And you didn't ever want to do, you know, you're always ashamed of me to stay here. Okay? We're going down there and have a ball for about 1,000 years here. And then we're going to go on and grow. That's what it says. Okay? You won't rule. You won't reign with it. Okay? How's that for a punishment? Being left in heaven. Okay? Just got, but that's what it says. Go read. Where else is he going to put you? It says you can't rule and reign with him. Okay? What's he doing there? But this is what he envisions. This is what he sees in this regeneration with that world going on forever. And he's planned this and he wants that. He wants it to go out there. All right. A word of prayer. Do you have a
question? Would heaven be much bigger?
I imagine heaven would be bigger. All right. Because everything keeps expanding. All right. Well, that's actually the New Jerusalem with the streets of gold. Okay? And that's different than heaven and earth. It's another thing in itself. Okay? There'll be gold in heaven. There'll be gold on earth. And there'll be gold all around. You know what, Trevor? If you're saved and resurrected, you'd be able to go to the sun, reach in the middle of that sun, and grab a little gold out and have it. Yep. If I turn it into donuts, if you want.
Yeah, all right.
Father, I thank you very much now. That was fun talking about time and such. I pray help open our understanding of these things. And Lord, I do pray now that you would just bless this church. You know, I'll be gone for a few days here and bless the Wednesday night service with Brother Neil. And pray this. And Lord, heal up Mrs. Hain. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Today I lost my wallet. It was in my pocket and my coat. And when I went to the plane, it was gone.
That's very sad. Yes, that is very sad.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.